Gerry Flannery and what the departing Dunnacha Ryan has meant to Munster rugby. Isaac Bass raves about being with Ireland in New Zealand in 2006. With James Haskell replacing Billy Villanpola in the Lions squad, we talk about the importance of characters on tour. All of that and a Pro 12 final preview. It's all coming up on The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes. Passionate about sport.
Two and Ringrose comes through. Oh. And he's brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score!
I know what website you use most often, but it's a sister of YouTube.
Hi Rob, Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next year.
He's calling.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
I say YouTube is probably YouTube.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Hard Yards Rugby Podcast on Sports Joe. Thank you for joining us. We have a lot to cover today, including the Pro 12 final and Warren Gatland losing a big lion. Gerry Flannery, Isaac Bass and Pat McCarry are in hand to discuss all of that. And later on, we're joined by Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes to give you odds on the weekend's Pro 12 final. Gentlemen, let's start today with cup final preparations and rituals when you were playing. How were you both in the week leading up to a final? Bossy?
Nah, it doesn't really change, you know, but it's a little bit, it's probably just a little bit of a different feeling about it. You know, the last week of training, you know, that's, you know, it's your last training, last gym session. So it just sort of amplifies things a little bit and you get a bit more excited, you know. We used the analogy of the last week of school there earlier and there's a certain giddiness about it, knowing that, you know, it's the climax season coming. So it's definitely, you know, you're happy to be there rather than not be like the other three provinces at the moment.
Yeah, is it hard to sometimes keep a check on that, you know, because you need an eye on the ball, even though it's, yeah, we've got one big exam to come, you know?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You sort of get a bit, the nerves are heightened, no doubt, and probably for myself, I used to sort of, the day before I'd start to get really nervous usually on the match, you know, and it's nervous excitement. But usually that starts a little bit earlier. Once team selection's made, you know, there's a lot of really, the other end of it, there's a lot of more extremely disappointed guys. That aren't getting out there if they're not involved in it. It's even worse if you're not involved in a cup final. The nerves start kicking in from probably the Tuesday.
Gerry, how were you in your playing days? Were you a nervy guy, a chilled guy?
I think I was pretty relaxed. I think you try and keep your preparation as close as possible to what a normal week is all the time, even when it's a cup final. You have to take into account that there's more media attention around the game, but you try not to do anything differently that's gotten you to that point. So yeah, I was stay pretty relaxed.
Who were the nervous guys that you would have played with?
Off the top of my head, David Wallace was always quite David Wallace. It was kind of weird because you'd be playing with him, and when you play with him, he was, you know, he was always the strongest, fastest, one of the most powerful guys in the field. And you were always so confident having him in your side when you went out to play someone. But before the game, he was like, he'd be white as a ghost, and Waddy would really be struggling to get food into him. After that, Waddy stood out for me. And I suppose everyone feels pressure a little bit come up to a game, but you have to understand that that's part and parcel of, you have to embrace that, because it's going to come when you've got big games. And if you're not feeling a little bit of excitement or nervousness, whatever word you want to put in it, then you're probably being a bit complacent. So it's probably a good thing to feel like that, you know, on the day of the game, and you try and embrace it and stay, you know, that you have to go through that step to get to where you want to go, which is winning something.
I can imagine if you're sitting there and you're seeing David Wallace wolfing down his breakfast, you're going, uh-oh, something's wrong here. He's off his game.
Yeah. Which was rare.
John Hayes has a reputation for, being a bit nervous for, again, someone who, looking at him, he always looked so calm on the field.
Yeah, actually you're reminding me of one there now. Well, Hayes would never come across anxious or anything the day of a game. It was just literally before we would go on the field, he would start throwing up. Like, he would always leave and you'd just hear someone puking in the toilet, like. But apart from that, Hayes just, I suppose because he was a difficult guy to get a read on emotionally, because he didn't really show any. You couldn't tell whether he was nervous or happy or sad, and it was just when he'd start throwing up, then you'd okay, he's nervous now.
I heard Paul O'Connell used to be a man for talking to himself as well and berating himself and talking himself through things before games. I remember when the lad said they sat beside him and he was just cursing away to himself, what the fuck are you doing and stuff like that, and turned around and he's talking to himself. Like, did you ever kind of come across that, Jerry? Like just muttering coming from Paul O'Connell's corner of the dressing room?
I can't say I did, no. Paulie would cue himself on things, but it would seem a bit weird if he was talking directly to himself, to me anyway. But I think he might be cueing himself, but he would be making points to the whole group, talking about things that we had to remind ourselves, some of the key points around our game plan, some of the threats from the opposition, but he would be announcing them to the group, but probably a lot to remind himself as well.
Is that it? Just kind of like the buzzwords, is, you know, because you don't want to be talking too much, is it? Is it just trying to get those final cues into people's heads to try and remind them of the jobs they have to do?
I suppose on that one, Bossy, I mean, there's players of different roles as well. You know, someone like an O'Connell, you could definitely see doing that. Another player, it mightn't be their place.
Yeah, exactly right. And there's people like Fla said, a lot of boys show emotion in different ways. It's hard to get your own spot, and some people try to, sort of go back into the corner a wee bit. But there's a lot of maybe nervous chat as well, and that's what you need to sort of try and control. And Paul was always a leader anyway, so those are the guys you do want chatting. Whereas, you know, all of a sudden you might be in the huddle with them, someone that never pipes up, sort of shouts something out, and then all of a sudden everyone's looking around thinking, shit, what's going on here? This guy's pretty nervous. We better try and look after him. So, yeah, there's little things like that, which sort of a little spikes that might occur now and then, you know?
Yeah. And the Leinster and Ulster days with you then? I mean, the Leinster side, the Ulster side, were there guys there who handled it in their own, like Hayes, their own unique and individual way?
Yeah, it's sort of, there's nothing really that stands out, to be honest. Like I said, I was always nervous, and I was probably one of those ones that was always chatting unnecessary chat, probably. Flo will be able to tell you more about that. I talk too much anyway. But
yeah, Isaac gives out about the nervous guy in the dressing room and everyone's worried, who the hell is this guy?
But yeah, it's sort of a lot of guys, you know, there's always the queue for the toilets, and you'll see the same ones there, you know. The urinals are copper and a hammer in just about three or four times before a match. And then the other guys are running around sort of giving each other probably unnecessary, you know, taps and slaps on the back and bumps on the shoulders and a bit of bravado and banging their own chests. So, and then there's some guy sitting in the corner having a little prayer to himself. And so it's a bit of a unique environment where you sort of, I'm sort of a fly on the wall, sort of, I don't know where to sort of concentrate, to be honest. So yeah. If I'm talking about guys getting sick, you know, you'd be in a huddle and you'd hear someone dry reaching, and the next thing they're flying their head into the huddle and just carrying on with it. So it's sort of, you know, it's just all part and parcel. You seem to brush off what everyone else is doing as long as you've got your own corner right.
Yeah, and the main thing come to the final is that you want everything to be the same, as I suppose, as Flass said. That's what got you there. Now, on that subject, Jerry, how's everyone feeling in Munster about the weekend?
Yeah, we're excited about it, and we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a big challenge for us. And, you know, particularly when we looked at the Leinster and Scarlets game, we saw just how dangerous they are. I suppose they've been kind of building and building and building. And, you know, I think Leinster and ourselves would have been aware they had that performance in them. But, you know, it still requires a lot of things to go right for them on the day. And they certainly were, I think, the worthy winners on the day. But I think Leinster would have been disappointed with what they showed. I don't think they really showed their own form. But Scarlets, to be fair to them, if you give them an opportunity, they'll take it.
On your own side, how was the review of the win over Ospreys? I mean, there are obviously a lot of positives in there.
Yeah, we were happy to get the result because it's knockout rugby now. I felt our set piece worked well. Obviously, there was some, you know, counter attacked well. You look for Zeeves' try, and there's some very pleasing aspects to our game. I don't think Ospreys really showed their hand in it. I think losing Reece Webb was a big loss for them, and I think they struggled a lot because of their line out. They took an awful lot of ball at the front, and for a team like Ospreys, that's it's difficult for them to really launch off that. You compare that now, if you contrast that with Scarlets going into this weekend, Scarlets have like the highest winning percentage line out in the league, and they take everything at the front, but they're still able to work off that. I think we forced Ospreys to go to the front a lot because we were marking the middle and the back, and and that was frustrating their backs. We could hear them. We could hear them, or our sideline could hear them during the game. Frustrating. They were looking for back ball or middle back, and that probably worked in our favour. And we're probably not going to have the same advantage this weekend against Scarlets, because they'll probably go to the front, and they're comfortable going to the front, and it's quite easy to win ball at the front. So it's going to be a different challenge for us, but that's why it gets harder when you get into a final.
So how many times have you all watched the Zeebo try? I mean, it was brilliant. As end-to-end rugby, from that tipper clearance kick all the way down, I mean, Pat, that was a very enjoyable part of last weekend.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? It really kind of lit up the game, didn't it? And then because it had got, it had kind of settled into a bit of a pattern at that stage, and just to be able to produce something like that, it's something that sometimes people accuse Munster of not being able to do, but they do have the talent to kind of pull it off, and just great to see so many lads involved in the try as well and get their hands on the ball, and just really, really a brilliant moment, and that's what Zeebo's capable of, and that's what the boys are capable of, and Blaendall playing a big part in it as well.
And Conor Murray's hands, like that was quicksilver stuff there. I mean, Bossy, from your point of view, I mean, as a former player, right, so how fun would it have been to be involved in a helter-skelter try like that, but with so much skill involved as well?
Yeah, exactly. Those are the ones you remember, and everyone will remember that, and it just shows that, like you said, Munster can definitely throw the ball around. So one thing, playing Scarlets this week, they throw the ball around. There will be those little breakdowns in play where they can go the length themselves. I think Connor was trying to get on the end of it, but I think there's occasion there where Zeebo even pushed him over, so ended up scoring it. So not with Zeebo's try, but Connor's probably had a good hand at the start and could have ended up finishing it if it had been a bit different, you know?
Yeah, he's happy enough about that one, all right. Jerry, I mean, you were talking about hearing the Ospreys guys chatter there, but the energy in the stadium must have been incredible when that went over.
Yeah, it was. They're kind of like, if you're talking about from an energy trying to preserve or conserve energy during a game, and when we kick the ball like we do, it puts a big emphasis on our forwards on the set piece, and puts there's an energy cost on then doing that to get a try like that off a kick receipt and just turning around. And I think if you watch the try back, what really impressed me was Andrew Conway's work rate to get all the way back from. He was the furthest player from the play. He got all the way back, and then he anticipated. He came on and he straightened that line and got the ball back inside. Was able to run that inside support line. The forwards love something like that because there's no cost to them. We got reefed. I think it was Yakutau maybe got reefed under the post, and Tipperick got that clearance. And then for the forwards, they're just looking to work back, and in their heads they're thinking, "Oh, I'm going to have to hit a break or now. I'm going to have to carry the ball up. We're going to have to build a couple of phases, and then we're going to have to see what's on for us." To see the lads being able to carve them like that, and then for us to turn around and get a try out of nothing is a huge bonus. And Pat is right that sometimes you could be critical of Munster and say that's something that hasn't been there enough in our game, but it's something that's developing. And when you've got the likes of Zeebs and Conway and Earlsey in your team, it's always on. It's just taking those opportunities when they come.
Yeah, it must be quite satisfying to you guys as coaches to see, firstly a game plan come off, would be to see them execute like that in on the fly situations with that kind of creativity and skill.
Yeah, well, I think like that's not down to it's not down to any specific coaching thing. All you're trying to do is you're trying to encourage players to have a work rate and to look for opportunities all the time within the 80 minutes, and that's exactly what that was. The players worked back and they just worked hard, and I suppose a bit of magic from Frankie Saidi when he got on the ball created space, and then getting that line from Conway, the inside support from Conway, and obviously Murray's quick hands as well to put Earlsey away. Like all of those things, like they're kind of like they're a result of kind of general coaching stuff, but it's down to the players and their ability to work hard off the ball, and that's what creates the opportunities for you.
So speaking of players, it does seem to be one of those nice lucky times where Munster, as far as I can see, have mostly a full deck to pick from. That is unusual in today's game. Flory, I'm right about that, yeah?
Yeah, well, look, everyone, I think at this stage of the season, everyone's got knocks, everyone's got bumps, but when you're going into a final, the bumps don't seem as bad, you know. So we've had to manage a few people during training this week, but by and large, yeah, we've pretty much everyone is good to go, and I think that's, you know, we've got to put a lot of credit down to our S&C, you know, Alad Walters and Aidan O'Connell, Adam Sheehan and PJ Wilson, for getting the players into, like, the work that they put down during pre-season is standing them now, and for our medical staff as well, that we've got players, that many players are available for us and fit and ready to go, is, you know, that's not down to us as coaches, that's down to them, and our training gets tapered during the year, and then we get told when we can go a little bit harder, when we have to back off, and you have to have faith in them, and it's when you get to a stage like this in the season that you go, geez, I'm glad I listened all the way through there now.
Now, one player who definitely will be, I suppose, leaving, you'll have to peel him off the pitch now, Dunnick O'Ryan. The last time wearing the Munster jersey before he goes off to France. Bossy, you had to play with him a few times?
Yeah, I played with him quite a number of times, and I think this game will suit him as well, because his work rate, where he gets around the pitch and stuff like that is unbelievable, in the way Scarlets play, they'll be needed. So I think, you know, he's one that probably will be showing a bit more emotion than usual this weekend. I know, it was interesting watching the end of the match there at Thurmond in the weekend, and all the boys were trying to lift him up and things like that, and he was having none of it. He was pushing them away, and he's quite humble in that side of things. You know, he just wants to go about his business and doesn't want a big deal made of it. But I know deep down, it'll be meaning a lot to him. So little things like that, it adds to the spirit of the occasion. He's got a lot of respect from his peers, I know, in Munster, but especially from all the guys he's played against in Ireland here as well. So I imagine that that'll be a big focus for a lot of the guys. Unintentionally, they won't be making anything of it, but just quietly, that's something that adds to the occasion.
Yeah, Jerry, big couple of days ahead for Dunica.
Yeah, Dunica has been an incredible, like, if you look at the work rate that he had just in that Ospreys game, he made 30 tackles, which is phenomenal for a lock, for a tight head lock as well, and you know, and he's been consistently performing like that for us this season. So, you know, I think I read somewhere Dunner's has been at Munster for, this is his 13th season, which is phenomenal. And I don't know what way professional rugby is going to go, if it goes any bit along the lines of football in the future, that kind of service to a club is going to be unheard of. So you know, the best send off we could have, we'd love Dunica to get some silverware at the weekend and finish off like that, because he's been such an incredible Munster man. And yeah, look, I know Scarlets will have the same. They'll have the likes of Liam Williams, and then we'll be leaving, and they want, you know, the shoe will be on the other foot for them. They'll be looking, well, we want to send them off with silverware, but sure, we can only do our best on our side for Dunica, and hopefully he'll have the send off that he deserves.
Jack O'Donoghue was telling me a nice story about Dunica. He was saying after, just when maybe he was in his first year with the senior squad, that Dunica had pulled him over and asked him if he wanted to do one-on-one tackles after a training session, and he said, you know, he was delighted to go and do it, but he said Dunica stuck the hip on him a few times, and he said it was like hitting the table. There was no budging him, he said, but he was saying Dunica's a great guy for kind of taking the younger lads over and kind of doing a bit of one-on-one work with them, and even line-out tips and stuff like that. Do you kind of see that kind of stuff every day and every week?
Yeah, well, I suppose from my point of view as well, like, after Axel passed and I ended up doing more of the forwards work and doing the line out and stuff like that, I worked very closely with Dunica during the season, and you know, he's got massive experience, and he's always looking to pass that on to the players around him. And I think for a lot of, when Dunica, we had a send off for some of the lads who were leaving, just to acknowledge their service to Munster, and Dunica spoke in front of the group, and I'm always cognizant of keeping the lines running through Munster, of, you know, keeping that tradition and it being passed on, and Dunica has been really, really good for that. He spoke to the group, and he spoke really, really, really powerfully. And I think you could talk to Bossy about this, but I think every year you go through those things where players move on or when they're retiring, and the younger lads in the room never really think that it's ever going to happen to them. But I think I think after that, I think a lot of the young players who would have listened to Dunica talk about his relationship with Munster Rugby and what it's meant to him, they definitely would be, you know, they feel a lot more privileged to play and be in a club like Munster and to play rugby for a living then after that. That's what Dunica does. It's not just the technical stuff that he has. He actually passes on that sense of responsibility. Players get a chance to play for Munster, and that's as important as any of the technical stuff that you can pass on as well.
Yeah, Bossy, when you're a young man, I suppose maybe these are the things you don't think about.
Nah, it's not the things you think about. You know, it's just you're on a blur and you're taking every week as it comes, and it's all new stuff. You know, and I guess exactly like Fla said, you know, I probably took it for granted leaving New Zealand for the first time to come into Ulster, and then when I had to leave Ulster and I thought I'd never leave a club, you know, so that was probably one of the hardest times, you know, and then all of a sudden you just start realising how special those moments are. And, you know, although I shifted a couple of times in my career, I can definitely sympathise with the emotion that goes into it, because the reality is that the end of every season, it's an emotional time at any team or club that's doing well, because, you know, you're not going to see the guys from probably next week when they go on holiday. You might never see some of them again and all that sort of scenario. And that's something that's just part and parcel of being a professional rugby player these days. They're in your path, your social group for so long. And then literally the next time you are all to get together, you don't know when that'll be, because it's just such a hard thing to do, and it's such a change in your social environment, you know. So those are the day-to-day things that you really enjoy. You get to know each other and respect each other, and you play for each other. And that's, you know, especially in Donica's case, you know, some of these young guys won't really realise how much he's meant to them maybe until another 5 or 6 years. It sounds like, you know, what he said in the weekend or earlier in the week is definitely going to give them that sort of insight into it anyway. So, you know, you can never take any game or any moment for granted.
So what was it like? So talk about leaving Ulster was a bit of it. Leaving New Zealand first, leaving Ulster, but then leaving Leinster would have been different, because that's the end.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I was always going to leave New Zealand, so it's just a matter of time. Thank goodness, you know, it's here. It's, you know, it's more sad leaving your family. Getting to Ulster, once I got over here, I thought I'd never change clubs or anything, because like Fla said, you know, that was a traditional sort of thing. Once you find a club, you stay there. And obviously with Ruan coming, I still wanted to play for Ireland, so I chose to leave, whereas I think it was a smart move as well. I don't think I would have got many games behind him up there. But yeah, and that was the emotional part of it, and I've still got strong ties to the North. And then once you're finishing Leinster career, and it was the best for my success, probably in my career was mostly gained with Leinster. But like you said, it was to end my career, you know, so it was different emotion all again. But at the same time, I have a lot of those guys in that group from just last year, not even a year ago. A lot of them I haven't, even though we're in the same city, it's hard to catch up with them. You might see them in the odd place here or there, but as a group, you know, I'm just totally avoid from it now, and you're never going to be in that social circle again, which is, it's strange, but that's reality, you know.
Do you get kicked out of the WhatsApp group, or is it up to yourself to leave?
Well, that's a new phenomenon now, you know. Never used to have WhatsApp groups in the days, but as soon as someone goes, it's pretty much, you know, you just see them, they either don't announce something and leave, and then all of a sudden everyone goes, oh, you know, should see Bossy left the group, or someone left the group, or things like that. So, or there's a bit of a ritual. If they don't leave, then they get unceremoniously kicked out. You know, it's sort of a jokingly way to say, right, you know, you've moved on, you've signed somewhere else. Now you got to leave our social circle too. You know.
Yeah. What was the word that, you know, some players are still in WhatsApp groups of clubs that they've left? That would seem weird to me. But it's a new phenomenon.
It's the ruthlessness, you know. You're sort of you got to be cruel to be kind to a way. You know, you can't leave a guy hanging on.
Rip that plaster off.
Yeah, yeah.
So speaking of being cruel to be kind, I'd say that review in Leinster, that semi-final, was something else. So Flaz talked about what Munster might take, and we might go back there again, from Scarlett's performance. Mm. They showed how lethal they can be in certain scenarios. But my God, I mean, I was sitting there in the stand, press box was up behind me, and I was looking up wondering how the guys were going to be writing the match report, and how much just bile would come out onto the keyboard, because it's hard to make that many mistakes in a game. I mean, what was it like? So you were sitting in the press box. What was the mood like up there watching that, Pat?
It was a weird one, because there was a slow start. There was like the first 20 minutes, there was no... there was no spark from Leinster, like there was nothing, and you kept waiting for it to kick off and happen, and there was no big moment. Yeah, like the moment could have been the Nasiwa try, but that got called back. Like that's always something that gets them going, but that got called back. I think they lost the scrum then after that as well, and then Scarlets they had them well worked out. Like they just were all over them at the breakdown, counter attacked them as well, targeted a few of the kind of the areas that they kind of saw as soft, and they really profited. And then the funny thing was, like, there was a real flat atmosphere about the whole thing, but in the last, when Leinster got that kind of try with maybe 20 minutes ago or something, it looked like we could be writing about Leinster getting hit through here anyway, but then Scarlett's upped it a gear again. Williams got a couple of great penalties as well, and it was a really, like, Nisei was absolutely fuming at the end of the game, because he said that review is going to hurt so much, because they're going to look back at, you know, all the opportunities, all the space in behind them, and that they didn't take advantage of. And there was definitely a few stories the next day on newspapers and websites where Leinster were getting ripped to shreds, and for a side to get into two semi-finals and play so well all season, to get shredded is harsh, but that's kind of what the Leinster lads would probably expect of themselves, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's it. I think they've set a standard this year, especially in league play, of being just a brilliant attacking side.
Yeah.
And there was just so many holes in that team. There was knock-ons, there was kick-offs not going 10, not once, but twice.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd even wonder about the pre-match strategy. Sean O'Brien pulls out. Do they replace him with another flanker to retain the 6-2 split in the bench? No, they change the strategy and put Ross Byrne instead. Yeah. So you just wonder. But I don't know. It was extraordinary to watch. It really was. It's a long time since I've seen a game with that many errors in it. Bossy, what impressed you though about the Scarlets?
The Scarlets, look, they're flying under the radar, but they play a good brand of rugby, and they can all play. You know, that's what I like about them. And they're smart. They take their opportunities, but without being there's 150-50 there, and they'll take it. But you know, there'll be different kettle of fish this weekend. You know, in the Aviva, they got to come over here 2 weekends in a row to get up. They're up emotionally, probably a lot more maybe than Leinster were, and possibly that might take a bit of a toll on them. It's hard to just keep repeating that emotional spike, you know. But yeah, like they're good all the way through. Their back row especially is very good. Tyke Byrne, their former Leinster player, is very good over the ball and is very good in general play and offloading, and that helps with, like Flair said, even though they might get forced to the front, they can still play because they've got these individuals that can offload, they can beat their man one-on-one, so it's going to be a tough match, I imagine.
Okay, that'll be it for the Pro 12 final preview, and next we will talk about withdrawals from the Lions Tour.
Well, you got something to write with? Good, it's time to work on your interviews.
My interviews? What do I gotta do?
Week to week, no matter who you're playing, you're gonna say the same thing time and time again.
You're gonna have to learn your cliches.
You're gonna say, you know, it's a big, big challenge this weekend, gotta get up for it.
You're gonna have to study them, you're gonna have to know them.
So many cliches in players as well as journalists. I'm looking at you here. You must be so fed up and bored of listening to this stuff.
We gotta play them one day at a time.
Well, you know, the press conference yesterday, I was asked, about, you know, three big games left to try and make playoffs. And what did I say? We're all just looking forward to just taking it one game at a time, aren't we?
Pretty boring. Of course it's boring. That's the point. Write it down.
What a ridiculous, boring cliche.
I know. Write it down.
Yeah. You can't not be boring. You just got to say the same old stuff everybody says.
You'll say it best when you say nothing at all.
Thanks for listening to the podcast today. If you are listening for the first time, subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. Now, let's talk about Lions. Billy Vunipola is out of the tour. Bossy, how big of a loss is that?
Very big, yeah. Obviously, just for the physicalness of it, being down in New Zealand as well, and his hitting and ball carrying, that'll be missed to get the yards over the line.
Yeah, he's someone who, no matter who you're playing, Billy Vunipola can bust a line. And when he's on form, he can have periods during a game where he's unplayable.
Yeah, one of those things, even if he's not busting the line, he's attracting defenders. So, you know, quite often he's good to use as a dummy man, or you're going to get more guys committed to him and into that ruck just because he's carrying the ball, you know, which creates opportunities for somebody else. A lot of the analysis from I imagine the New Zealand teams might have focused a bit on him as a dominant, so now they've probably got to do a little bit more homework on the rest of the squad possibly. So, you know, there might be advantages of that to some extent. Someone that comes in might not be as known to them, which could create more opportunities, but Vunipola is definitely a massive loss.
Jerry, your view on this, how big a blow is this for the Lions' chances down there?
Well, from analysing Vunipola when he was playing with Saracens, it's probably the biggest loss they could have had from the squad. I think he's a player who just wins collisions so effectively and so consistently that that's something that the Lions could have built their whole game plan around coming into the test matches. And I think they're going to have to rethink how they're going to go now, because I think Vunipola has been proven over the last 3 years that, you know, at the very highest level he can still get you, regardless of how slow the ball is, regardless of how set the defence is, he will still get you go forward ball. And if he doesn't, defenders still have to respect him, which will draw them in and create space or in other places. So it's a huge loss for them. But I think it's when you look at how we rocked up and performed for Saracens on the day, he didn't even go off. He went off to get his shoulder strapped and they just kept going and then withdrew from the tour afterwards. I think it says a lot about his character. And I think it's a massive loss for the Lions, but it doesn't mean that the tour is over for them, far from it. But they're just going to have to rethink now, I think.
Yeah, and there's the impact on Vunipola as well. So, you know, there's an impact on the tour squad, the Lions' chances, etc. But it's tough for a guy having to go without even stepping foot on the plane, going out there. Jerry, I'm conscious that this happened to you in 2009. What is it like being the guy who has to pull out before the tour really gets started?
It's disappointing, but that's rugby, isn't it? You're going to get injuries, and I suppose, you know, it could have happened at any stage. And I think if Vinny Vunipola looks back on the season, he'll still say it's been a pretty good season for him. Obviously the Lions tour will be the pinnacle of a lot of players' career, but he's still young enough, he'll get back out there if he can stay healthy over the next 4 or 5 years. For me, that's probably my last chance of going on the Lions tour. But look, it was a freak injury where I broke my elbow, but it could have happened to me. I could have got injured 2 weeks before that or four weeks before that and not even got out there into the training camp. But look, injuries happen. You just have to be philosophical with it and just take the good with the bad.
What people can be different in how they react. You know, some people, if they're injured, they don't like being around. They just want to work in their own rehab. Like for you, did you find it difficult to watch the games? Did you watch the games?
I found it. Yeah, I suppose when I had an operation, I had two operations. I had to get my elbow reconstructed, and then I'd injured my shoulder during the Six Nations that year, and it was still, there was something wrong with it. And I just said to the surgeon when he was going in, "Would you take a look at this shoulder as well?"
While you're in there, yeah.
Yeah, it was literally like that. And when I woke up, then I was in two slings. So he said, "Yeah, you had a slap tear in the labrum on this shoulder, and we reconstructed the elbow or whatever it had to do with that." So I was pretty heavy duty out of, you know, all I could do was train, you know, just get on a bike or just do legs. So I was doing that for a while, and then I just went away with my missus and we went away on holidays, and I caught the tests, but I didn't pick up much on the warm up games, you know, because I was in a different time zone. And I suppose it's just once you're out, you know, like, it's not like if it was Munster or Ireland, I'd be all over it, because I'd feel like, you know, I have a relationship with that team, I'm going to be playing with them again, and you know, that's part of being a good team man, is when the team is playing, when you're injured, that you still rock up. And I think a lot of, you know, players take, I personally took a lot from it when I'd see injured lads coming in and showing up, because I know it's a difficult thing to do. But with the Lions, I wasn't going to fly out to South Africa on my Todd and shoot him around like some sort of weirdo. And the tour was over for me. So yeah, I watched the test and I was disappointed for them. But, you know, that's it.
And Fly arrives up
in the Lions gear, all his gear and his kit bag over his shoulder.
Two slings. employ two lads to carry the bags. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Going back to the tactical side of this, how does this change things for someone like CJ Stander? Like, he's eight, he's a six. Is he now more of an eight on this Lions tour, Bossy?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, it puts a lot more up for grabs in the matches leading into the test matches and things like that. And like you said, although it's one guy's misfortune in rugby, is it's always another guy's, you know, the making of another guy. So there's a couple of guys there, there's Moriarty, there's CJ, they're going to get an opportunity, and that's the chance for them to put their hand up. And quite often teams have, like we said, have prepped for who they expect to be there, and then they sort of, not that they don't prep as well for the guy that comes in, but they probably just relax a little bit and focus on other areas. So it'll be, I can see CJ coming in and having an absolute stormer and taking control there and being the eight of choice. And then, you know, the end of this trip, no one's asking about Vinopola and stuff like that, because if someone's come up, stepped up and taken their opportunity.
Yeah, and it is an opportunity for James Haskell now. Warren Gatland's obviously talked about this week, the reasoning for picking Haskell. He actually compared him to Alan Quinlan, saying that, you know, he's the kind of player who, now that he's in the squad, first he's got the kind of personality that can come in, give the place a bit of bounce. But he could end up fighting into contention for a test spot, you know, even if it was a bench spot due to his versatility. He's an interesting character. Bossy, is he someone you've come across?
Yeah, he's definitely a guy I like to play against anyway, so I don't know. That's probably all I could really say about it. But, yeah, look, he'll add a bit to the team environment. And what I would say is he has been playing very well in the last year or so. He's worked very hard. He's had a couple of injuries himself as well, and he's worked hard to get back from that. But, yeah, and he's versatile, so he can play a number of positions, which I think will be key when you're going out with on a tour with such a unprecedented amount of tough games. You know, they've got the test matches, and any one of those games against the Super Rugby franchises will be equivalent to a test match as well. Add in the Maoris game. So what you're going to need is you're going to need guys that can play at that level and guys that can play in multiple positions, and I think he sort of suits that very well.
Jerry, when you hear Gatland comparing someone to Alan Quinlan in that way, what does that mean to you when you think about Quinny?
I think he's probably talking about a character on tour. Quinny is a pretty... you know, he's a big personality on a tour, and you know, he's quite witty, and he's a funny guy, and he's cheeky, and I think that's what they probably see in Haskell. That's probably why they drew that comparison. So you know, I've never picked a touring side, so I don't know, but when I hear coaches talk about it, they talk about, like, it's important to get the right blend of characters there as well, and they probably see, like, what they lose from Billy Vunipola's, I suppose, on-field play. They're probably looking, you know, we're not going to replace it there directly with James Haskell, even though he's a powerful ball carrier. But, you know, James Haskell brings other things to the table, and he's a really good character on tour. Sounds a little bit patronising when a coach is talking about that, like, you know, you're a good lad, or you're crack, you're a good banter. But it is important as well. Like, if you ask Bossy about any, you know, going on tour, I think those characters bring everyone together, and they're really, really important that people... Particularly when tours are a little bit down, you know, there are lads who can bring everyone together and lift everyone.
Yeah. Flair was actually a good man on tour, weren't you, Flair? I remember we were talking about nervousness and pre-match build-ups earlier, but I remember a lot of guys like getting haircuts before, you know, match day haircuts. I remember you got one in Auckland one year, and we had to pull you out of the hairdressers. He was late for a meeting, so he paid the price for that for the next couple of weeks, didn't you?
Yes, this old yarn has been going on, following me my whole life, trying to get away from it. That was my first that tour, 2006 Irish tour to New Zealand, was actually my first ever national tour, and it was such an incredible laugh, I couldn't believe it. Like, I came back from the tour talking to, say, the likes of Paulie and Donica and Hayes and Axel, and saying to them, like, is this what it's been like for the last, you know, 7 or 8 years that you've been going away on tour every year? It's much crack, you know, because it was a really good tour, no, Bossy?
It was. I think it's one of the best tours I've ever been on. That was my first tour as well, and I was like, I was in awe. I was like, geez, that's what touring with Ireland's all about, you know. It was unbelievable. So, and that's what the key is, to try and make tours those memorable occasions, because you know, that's what makes it a successful tour, is that sort of bond and stuff, you know.
That was the tour that Brian O'Driscoll, I think, did a stage dive in Auckland Bar, I think, after the second test, and he showed up in a few tabloids and stuff.
Jeez, I can't remember that part of it. But,
I know, because I was in the bar when he did the stage dive as well.
He was probably aiming at you. might have been a flying headbutt rather than a save dive, I don't know.
But rewind a bit there. So, Boss, you're saying, like, this is an unbelievable experience for you, that tour. I mean, you made your debut against the All Blacks in Auckland, but more broadly, expand on that.
Yeah, it's just like I said, you know, I'd just left the year before, and I thought it'd be a bit weird going back to New Zealand, but it was one of the best tours I've ever been on, just because of the group we had with that. Even though it was back where I was from, we actually had a test in Hamilton as well, which is where I'd been playing previously, and yeah, it's just that, just because of the group of lads we had and the crack that was on that tour, it was definitely one of my best rugby memories.
Obviously. Are you talking about like pure fun, pure crack, or like as a bonding experience?
Oh no, just bit of everything, you know. We played well and stuff like that, and we had opportunities, especially, you know, for the
first test, yeah.
Yeah, for the squad, the All Blacks then were unbelievable, and you know, we had probably a bit of new talent coming through, but you know, so that part of it as well, the whole playing side, the training side, you know, just the experience as well. And I think, as Flair said, the guys stuck together really well, and it created a lot of momentum for the future years, I think, that particular tour.
Yeah, and there is one thing that, Haskell might get a bit of, he's a good promoter, that aspect of himself, but he was also, he did do a bit of the world tour during his career. Yeah. He played a few games for the, I think about half season with the Highlanders.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another reason. He's a guy who knows the territory down there, which is no harm.
No, it's not no harm, especially in New Zealand, you know. You need to be as familiar with certain areas as you can, especially when they're travelling around the whole country. Yeah. And like you said, they've been there enough that a lot of the guys do know the areas, but, you know, he'll have little things that, you know, like, for example, take them off something off the beaten track, which is that they've been to on every tour. He might have a different coffee shop to go and chill out for an example. But those are little things that make it special, make it just a little bit more comfortable for guys.
What was it like last year when you went back then?
Last year, to be honest, I really enjoyed it. Some aspects of me, I was thinking, why didn't I come back to play a little bit earlier? Maybe I tried to hold on to the dream too long here, you know, when I got a little bit too old. But look, it's totally different again. Like I said, it was not just about the success on the pitch. It was more to be able to play in front of my friends and family that I had sort of, I guess, those relationships I'd burnt for the last 12 years. So it was a nice way to finish off. So I went down and played for my club as well, in the club competition down there, which is important, always been important to me, to go back to the grassroots. You know, so I was playing with good mates and things like that there. And although it was a bit of a slog fest and stuff, I really enjoyed it, you know. So that's little factors I've always sort of wanted to finish my career with.
Yeah, I think we'll leave it there. And just to note for the record that Isaac Boss voluntarily brought up the subject of haircuts, right? We might come back to that one someday, right?
Yeah, maybe I had a good haircut, you know. Everyone else seems to criticise it, but I was pretty happy with it. So,
That's the main thing. Up next, we look ahead to the betting odds ahead of this weekend's Pro 12 final.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing, really. Remember Raj Kev in the Killiney? He used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
We're back on the Hard Yards, and we are looking ahead to Munster versus Carlos in the Guinness Pro 12 this weekend. We're joined by Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes. Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good. But first, before we get to that, I'm going to make a public service announcement for rugby fans. So it's a big weekend of rugby. It starts Friday in Northern Hemisphere rugby only, I'm talking here. Mm-hmm. So Friday night, 7:45 p.m, it's Northampton against Stade. This is the playoff to get into the Champions Cup final. That's on Sky. 8 p.m, La Rochelle against Toulon in the first. semi-final for the top 14 in France. We move into Saturday, 2:30 p.m. Wasps against Exeter on BT. That's the Premiership final. Exeter, of course, put out Saracens in a phenomenal
game. Yeah,
gee, that was something else. If you haven't watched the highlights of that game, do it. The last couple of minutes are just amazing to watch. 5 p.m. Claremont against Racing. Friend of the podcast, Rowan O'Gara.
Yes.
Going for trying to get into the final of the top 14. And then 6:15, the game we want to talk about, Munster against Scarlets on Sky, on TG Carr and BBC Wales. How's this looking from Ladbrokes' perspective? Who's the favourite?
Well, the favourite is Munster, hands down. They're a 7-2 on. Currently, you can back them in the handicap at 10-11, minus 8, but I was speaking to our traders this morning and they thought maybe they've overshot that a little bit. So they're going to see what happens in the market. They suspect that the spread is going to get a little bit narrower. If you think they're only going to win by 5 points, you can back them minus 5 at 8-13. And if you think they're going to do better than we anticipate and win by 11 points or more, you can back them at 13-10. Scarlets are 11-4. If you want to back them plus 5, you can back them at 13-10.
So Munster heavy favourites for this game, but in terms of the odds for them being Pro 12 champions, that has shortened a lot since the start of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think the first bet that we struck on Munster, it was 8-1. And I suppose I've spoken about this before, like Ladbrokes never anticipated that they would do as well this season. And definitely their strong point seems to be the unity that they have with their team.
Yeah, it's certainly been a theme throughout the season of, I suppose we might have thought that their name was written on the Heineken Cup, now it might be written on the Pro 12.
Yeah, and it's that thing, that emotional bounce that they had for, you know, they went on a bit of a winning streak, but you always kind of think that they're going to dip or fall off in a cliff at some stage, like in terms of kind of their prep or their emotion and stuff like that, but they've seemed to have kept it up all season, and there is a real kind of belief that's in that squad now, and just so many guys stepping up and all the kind of the younger lads that, you know, everybody probably thought a couple of years ago, like, who are these guys? Are now all of a sudden the starters, the household names as well. And like, look at even someone like John Ryan, who's kind of, he's not exactly a young lad, but he's kind of come out of nowhere to be a real reliable this season.
In terms of we saw that the try scoring potential that Scarlets have, though, Munster have their own. There was a fantastic work by Zeebo, which we've talked about, and Keith Earl is obviously in good form, and they've got a few other wingers and back three players around. What do Ladbrokes see as the favourite for first try scorer in this game?
Well, first try scorer, and the other thing about it is that we didn't actually think that Leinster played too bad last weekend. We just thought that Scarlets played exceptionally well. So we wouldn't be surprised if they got off the mark first. So we've put Steph Evans in at 11-4 to be the first try scorer. We don't think it's going to be a high scoring match, but we think Scarlets could get off the mark quicker. And obviously he's now allowed to play, seeing as they rescinded the judgment of him being sent off.
He's now allowed to play. It's an interesting call. So I'm going to, full disclosure, at the time I called it as not a red. Okay,
I think I saw that on my timeline at the time. Yeah.
There was not a lot of backing for my call that it wasn't a red. I'm not even sure that I'm still right, even though the decision has gone quote unquote my way. Pat, from your position, what did you think of that call, and what do you think of the decision to rescind it?
It was the time that you just, once they played that over like 9 or 10 times on the big screen, like, and each time they played it, it was like the Leinster crowd, and Josh van der Vleer calling for stretchers and stuff like that for Ringrose, and it got worse the longer it played out, and each time it played out, the lads knew, like, it looked worse and worse for Evans, and I think the whole thing was like, he might, like a lot of these things, he might not have meant it, but it was the action, you know, that, you know, he had went that far, he had committed that much, he had made the mistake, so he had to go. And now I kind of see that they come out and said the fact that Samson Lee, the prop, got involved as well, meant that Evans, you know, it wasn't his fault all of a sudden, and he was absolved of blame. But I suppose my thing about that is, like, now this isn't as maybe premeditated as 2005, but are you saying then that if two lads combine to dump tackle somebody like Mielamu and Umaga did, that both of them get off scot-free? Like, or who's the one to blame? Like, so it's a bit of a weird one that they've cited Lee coming in. Like, so, you know, if they're both wrong, who gets the blame? So, I think maybe send him off at the time is right, but I'm kind of happy enough to see him play this final because it'd be a shame if he was to miss it because of that.
Yeah, who makes the decision? How many people?
So this is with a three-man panel, all Scottish, so not involved from any of the two unions involved, and they voted by a majority, so it wasn't unanimous.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can read that was 2-1. Mm. And they've explicitly cited the precedent in the last World Cup of the two Scottish players, Johnny Gray and Ross Ford. It wasn't a tackle, it was a clear out.
Yeah.
But again, they're saying, well, neither of them individually was guilty.
Yeah.
It was the combination.
The sum of their parts.
Kind of. And I know we always want to be a team to be more than the sum of their parts, but perhaps it's an odd one.
It's so a precedent as well. Imagine that. Like, just 2 years can go for someone now if you want.
Yeah. I was overthinking this, as I want to do. And I'm always wondering, if it happens again, should there be two yellows? Should there be, are there other ways of handling the situation? Because to actually say nothing bad happened there at all,
yeah,
is kind of weird. We'll get off that subject now.
we could be here for a couple of hours.
I'd love to talk about this with a ref very off the record to see what they're thinking about this.
Yeah.
Because letter of the law, I can definitely see how the decision was made. And there'll definitely be, I think, some kickback in the ref community saying, well, hold on, what do we do in these situations?
Yeah.
Anyway, going back to the game at the weekend. So Steph Evans is playing. It could, you said, Hayley, that Ladbrokes see this as actually being a low scoring game, but
yeah, we haven't put up the unders or overs markets yet, but we do think it's probably going to be sort of the betting's going to kind of lie in favour of around, you know, three tries for the total match. And if you want to get stuck into the highest scoring half, the first half you can back at 5-4 and the second half at 4-6. I always find the halftime full-time predictions quite interesting because how's the game going to kick off? Our Scarlets going to try and give Munster a fright, and if so, you could back Scarlets to be leading at halftime and Munster at full-time, but Munster to be leading it in both halves is 4-6 and Munster Scarlets is 10-1. So yeah, a Munster to score first are 4-7.
Okay. And we have Nigel Owens on the whistle.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's from one of the unions, but the Pro 12, my understanding is that they said, well, we've got one of the best in our referee panel. We've only got two referees who aren't Welsh or or Irish, so let's go with one of them. If there's no complaints from the coach or the teams, let's go.
That's
a good ref. Refs, I don't think, have nationalities. They're just from Refland. I think when you get to that, what do you think?
Yeah, you hope nothing controversial happens at the weekend, but then all of a sudden, it's the majority will kind of see him, if he's a good ref, he's a good ref, but you'll always find a few kind of, if something controversial happens, kind of might cite it or something. Or I know in the past Welsh sides have been unhappy with Irish refs looking after provincial games against each other and stuff. So, What do they get paid? I would say Nigel probably would be on the top one, but see if we can get him.
No idea. So you get a few who are semi-pro, yeah. That would be a good one for a future one, yeah. We'll do our best. I'm looking at Joe, the producer here. We'll get it. He's nodding.
We'll get Nigel in someday.
We'll work the phones. Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much to Isaac Boss, to Jerry Flannery, to Pat and Hayley, to Joe Harrington for producing and Shane Dempsey for looking after the sound. We'll be back next Thursday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. I'm Andy McGeady. This has been The Hard Yards. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.